Well, without wishing to frighten the horses, I'm going to do something very strange, which is start on time. But this is a Basque occasion and not a Spanish occasion, and therefore it seems to me entirely appropriate. It's my great pleasure to open this session of the cycle of lectures that are part of the agreement that the LSE, through its Cañada Blanca Centre, has had with the government of the Basque Country. The cycle began with a lecture last time we were actually here in this lecture room, was with the Lendakari, Pachi López, on the 7th of March, who started us off with a brilliant lecture on social democracy in the 21st century. And today the lecture will be by Josu Ugarte, who's the president of Mondragon Internacional. Before I introduce him, I'd like to just say a few words to thank those who've made the whole cycle possible. Guillermo Echenique, who's with me here to your right, to my left, is the General Secretary of External Activities of the Basque Government. I'd like to thank him very much, because without him, none of this would have happened. But I'd also like to thank Balassi Abando, who's here with us, who's one of the patrons of the Cañada Blanca Centre, and without whom it certainly wouldn't have happened. And also José Manuel Mata of the University of the Basque Country, who's been an assiduous collaborator of the Cañada Blanca Centre, and I'm delighted that he's been able to be with us today. And I'd also like to welcome Fernando Pérez, who's the current president of the Spanish Chamber of Commerce in London, because we have benefited greatly, I hope it's been a mutual benefit, from a growing collaboration with the Spanish Chamber of Commerce. Now, I was delighted when, I met Josu for the first time when he came as part of the delegation that accompanied Pachi López, which was a great occasion for us and had a tremendous impact. I think it was great for the Basque Country, it was great for us. And Josu was part of that delegation. For me, Mondragon, of which he is the president, has always had a kind of magic aura to it. When I started to be interested in Spain in the late 1960s, before most of you were born, it was a symbol in any context, it would have been a tremendous symbol of how a collective enterprise can be a success in a capitalist world. But in particular, it was an amazing symbol as a point of resistance to the Franco regime. Here was something that the Franco regime, which had tried to annihilate the Basque working class, and here it was triumphing in Mondragon. So it was still relatively small in those days. Today it's a massive multinational, but still a collective enterprise. It is, I think, very lucky to have as its president Josu Ugarte, who is an economist who trained at the University of the Basque Country and has spent his entire professional career with Mondragon, has become, that might sound as if it was very narrow, but in fact, he's, as a result of that, become a great globetrotter, fluent in Arabic, Polish, Chinese, am I looking Chinese? How's the Chinese going? He has represented Mondragon in Morocco, in Poland, in Paris, and also here in London. So he's a great linguist. Is also tremendously involved in educational enterprises in Spain, or should I say in the Basque Country, completely different country as we all know, and is an important member of the board of the University of Mondragon. Now, Tim, you've come to listen to, not me, so with great pleasure, please join me in welcoming now Josu Ugarte.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. It's an honor to be here in the London School of Economics with you. And I would like to thank Basque government and LSE for making this possible. Okay? If someone had told me 18 years ago, when I was a student in the university, that I would be here today giving a PowerPoint presentation, okay, at the LSE, I would have told him that he was crazy. Okay? But here I am, and I am going to talk to you about the Mondragon experience. Okay? So I will divide my presentation into two parts. Firstly, I'm going to talk about our history and values. And secondly, I will answer a question that we are often asked. How is possible for a co-op to face globalization? Okay? These are the two parts. Before I start, three secrets, okay? The first one is, as you can realize, my English is not so good. The second one is, I am speaking better the first 15 minutes. And the third one is that I will try to do my best, okay? So I will begin by taking you back to 1935. Okay? You are living in a mountainous region that has made things historically. You have made the armor of Europe, okay? The swords, the shields, anything that comes out of the ground. Anything that's metal bending, you have made it. You have competed with the Germans to the north and the Italians to the south. You speak a language no one can understand that has not a reference to any other language known in the world. Some people say you look a little bit different, okay? And there are only 2.2 million of you. You are on the wrong side of everything. Okay. You were on the wrong side of the Spanish Civil War, which left over a million people dead. You opted to defend the existing legitimate government and opposed a dictator. You got crushed. Then, after the devastation of Second World War, you are left with nothing. Your towns are in rubble. Your valleys are quiet. Your people are unemployed. There is no food. There is no safety net. There is just total devastation. Then came a village priest to the rescue. His name is very hard to pronounce. For me, it's one of the best moments of the night. Because his father, José María Arizmendiarrieta. Okay, so our father showed up. He looked around and he said, well, unless we collaborate, we are done for. We must collaborate. And of course, people said, yeah, great. But what does that mean? So he opened a little school and he preached collaboration for over a decade. Finally, five engineers graduated from that school and they formed a small co-op and they manufactured kerosene stoves. The priest went to Franco's government and said, I got this cooperative and I like to have them qualify for social security system. To which Franco's government said, what is a cooperative? The answer was no. I should tell you that one of the students of this school was my father. And my father told me that when the priest came, he started to speak about the social things, about the Marxism, about the to have an education, to be in another intellectual level, and so on, they were laughing at him. Because my father came to my grandfather at home, and he told him, listen, we have a new priest who is completely crazy. These are the history, okay? So the priest goes back to the Basque region and says, I just created my own mutual cooperative that will take care of this. It's called Labunaro and is now one of the top mutual insurance companies of Europe. Completely profitable, no scandal, and thus the job for the 84,000 plus that are involved in Mondragon today. Then the priest tried to get a loan. He went to the banks. The same answer. No. So he created his own bank. It's called Caja Laboral. They now have hundreds of branches throughout Spain. They totally escape to the subprime lending debacle that has affected Western economies. It's a huge success, and it is the People's Bank. The US National Cooperative Bank that President Kennedy helped to found in Washington, D.C., is modeled on Caja Laboral. And that small school that the priest created became a university, Mondragon University, with 4,000 students today, owned and run by the students, their parents, their teachers, and the cooperatives that employ these students. For those students who need a part-time job because they need to support their studies, there is a worker cooperative where they can work part-time as members of a co-op creating educational products. The name of the co-op is ALECOP. Today, Mondragon has evolved into something that is breathtaking now. We have about 84,000 people, 14 of them abroad, sharing a single ideas in over 250 companies. Last year, we had annual sales of $20 billion, again with our own corporate university, our own corporate bank, and our own corporate social security system. We are ranked as the top Basque business, the seventh largest in Spain, and the world's largest industrial cooperative. We are selling in more than 140 countries. We have 84 production plants abroad. We have 9 corporate offices, and we own 12 R&D centers. But what we have above all is the 10 principles that have made us successful. I'm going to go over of these principles because I believe that they are universally applicable. First one is education, okay? Unless you provide education, you can't get out of the starting gate. That is very important because, as you know, one of our characteristics is that the difference between the lowest paid and the highest paid, in our case, is 6 times, okay? So we cannot hire a top executives in the market. We should create our own top executives. So for that, we should educate, we should train everybody in the company, and not only for the top executives, as well for the people who are even in the production lines, because they could become a member of the supervisory board. You know, our supervisory board is formed by our people, okay? So education is the first one. The second one is the sovereignty of labor. If we have to choose between labor or capital, we would always choose labor. If we have a production line who is not profitable, who is 1% profitable in Mondragon, and we could produce this product in China, in Brazil, in Mexico, with 5, 7, or 8% more, we don't move the production, okay? We left the production at home in order to maintain the employment, okay? If we are losing money, we move the production, okay? Because for us, labor is above the capital, but the profitability is first, because without profitability, we cannot have employment. You follow me? Yes, thank you. Okay, other principles are democratic organization, open admission, and participation in management. We are obliged to participate in management if we are chosen, okay? In Mondragon, it's one worker, one vote. And this is another big difference, because usually, for example, in distribution cooperatives, you have the workers as associates, but as well the consumers, okay? In the case of industrial companies in Mondragon, 100% of the shares of the votes are in the worker hands, okay? They decide their own future. This is important. Wage solidarity is another principle, okay? Our ratio is 1-6 between the lowest paid and the highest paid. Contrast that with the United States, I don't know in UK, okay, but I think most of people similar. Okay, the ratio is 400-1, okay? In our case, 6-1.
If you're a footballer, of course, it's 4,000-1.
Okay, so an intercooperation between cooperatives, okay? For example, the placement of the associates in other co-ops on the flexibility of working hours. Okay, and I will stop a little bit here, and I will go to the presentation, because some people, especially the American guys, they cannot understand how it's possible for a co-op face globalization. For them, it's impossible to have very good executives, okay, in the co-op, because we are not well paid. Okay, this is their approach. Okay, so I will try to, in 25 minutes, to explain how we are analyzing the globalization and how we are answering to this globalization. Okay. So. Our activity areas, I think that you know more or less, we have in financial area, these are our main brands, okay? And this is local activity. We are only in Spain and some province near Basque Country. The distribution area is only in Spain, okay? It's national activities. And knowledge area is only the Basque Country. So I will speak to you about this one, okay, industrial area. These are our main brands, and 70% of our sales are now abroad. Okay, 70% of our sales we are not doing in Spain, luckily, because if not, now we will face a lot of problems. Okay, so we are analyzing the trends, what's happening in the world. Okay, and how these trends will affect our business, because they are affecting very, very hard. First one, the visible macro trends, you know, the aging population, the digital world, focus on innovation, clean tech, sustainability, and new forms of governance. You know that. I will not speak about this visible trend because it's known. But we know that there are some trends that we are not noticing. And there are these three, in our opinion: acceleration, the second one is China, and the third one is the collapse of the middle. I will explain a little bit each one, okay? Acceleration. We have a problem, I don't know, in UK, but in the rest of Europe, sure, okay? The emerging countries are more rapid than us. They are thinking in a long vision. They have a lot of ambition, and they when they decide something, they have a very strong execution. Okay, we are a little bit stop. Okay, now for us it's very difficult to take a decision in Europe level and at the company level as well. Okay, and we are moving slowly comparing with these countries. Okay, and the reason of that, according to Dominique Moisin, who write Geopolitics of the Emotion, is that in USA and Europe we have an emotion of fear. We are thinking that our children will live worse than us. It's true. And for us, tomorrow will be worse than today. And in Asia, okay, the emotion is hope. They have trust in them. They think that tomorrow will be better than today. They forget about the spiritualism, okay, and they are thinking now in materialism. Okay, so we are facing that. It's a qualitative, let's say, trend, but it's very important for us. Yeah? The second one is this one: the evolution of the machinery in the industry. And this is important because we are the main producer in Spain of machinery, and we know this machinery where it's going. And you will see the figures, but this is the consumption of each country in million dollars. Okay, you have the United Kingdom at the bottom, and Japan and Germany, who are usually the industrial countries, traditional industrial countries. This is the consumption in 2010. This is China.
The consumption of machinery.
The machinery is important because the machinery is, let's say, the center of the industry. If you need to construct, to produce energy, household appliances, cars, trains, planes, you need machinery.
So when you look at these figures, you realize where the industry is going. Okay, so China is more than the 10 countries to next 10 countries together. And if we take the evolution of that, we realize that in 1990, China was 2% of the consumption. Okay, and now this is 46. And in 2007, they were more than the two traditional countries, Japan and Germany. So these figures are something really important, because this accumulation of industrial assets gives the Chinese economy an important competitiveness. Okay, they are more efficient because the new machinery is better than the old one and better quality. Okay, so they are. Okay, the world's factory. When I am showing that to my cooperatives, okay, I am telling them, listen, because some of them they are thinking, but I am not producing guitars, so for me no problem. I am not producing the mobile phone, no problem. Okay, I am not. I will not show you, but I am showing to my cooperatives that, for example, we are producing household appliances. China produced 50% of them. We are producing elevators. China produced 66% of total elevators in the world. Machines, they are producing 30%. The consumption is 47, but the production is 30%. Okay, and in cars, now they have 24%. So the industry is going to China. They will develop. They are a huge development in the industry on China. Okay. What's more, they have a very low cost. This is the cost in dollars for the direct labor people, 1.45 euros. Okay, in the Basque country we have between 16 and 20. And even though they will increase about 20% each year, they will, in 4 years they will have double. But double is more or less 3 euros. Okay, so we will have a problem. We have now a challenge. We will have the same challenge in 5 years. Okay. The second thing that we are trying to look for the future is what they will do with the brands, because now they are we don't know if they will follow the Korean strategy, because the Koreans were spending a lot of money in advertising and developing their brands, or they will buy some European brands. So, but what we know is that they are really now very competitive. The best-selling car in China is a Chinese brand, and the largest distribution in China is a Chinese one. So they are competitive. We will see what is going on in the future. Okay, and the patents, because some of you in the past country in our company, we should tell them that that they should forget about China as a poor country. Now they have every year 500,000 engineers with degree engineers, licenciados. Okay, more than USA and Europe together. So the patents is this one. They were 100,000. They were producing, let's say, 100,000 patents per year in 2003. Now in 2009 they produced 300. Okay, the evolution according to Thomson Reuters is this one. Okay, so they are competing in cost, they are competing in brands, and they are competing in technology. Okay. Okay, the third problem is the collapse of the middle. That means that in some mature markets, the consumer is demanding the price products, the low price products. Okay, and the problem of that is when you should answer to this demand, you should produce in low cost countries. Okay, this is the problem. So I will go. When the market is not mature, the demand is in the middle of the market, of the position. First price usually is bad quality, and the people has not enough money to spend in the high end. Okay, we were here. 10 years ago, because we were the low-cost country. Spain was the low-cost country in Europe. Okay, now we are the high-cost country, a problem. So the problem is that now we are not here, okay, we are in the middle, and the demand is going like that. Okay, the middle is collapsing, and we have the demand is going to this kind of product, and as well when the market mature to the sophisticated products. Okay, but the big risk is with the crisis. The problem is that we could continue like that. Okay, and the problem is like this one with the crisis. We don't know if the people, okay, will decide to demand more and more first price. Okay, and this first price we could answer only from low-cost countries. Okay, so 70% of our industrial costs are small and medium enterprises. Okay, this is another secret. We are a big corporation, okay, but in fact we are the addition of small companies. Today a Chinese SME, a small and medium enterprise, can get 4 times better results than a Spanish company. Okay, that we have the figures. I didn't want to show you how we calculate and so on. Okay, but the forecast for the future. Okay, this is the growth forecast, the GDP. This is from International Monetary Fund. Spain will increase 6.6% from 2010 to 2011. The emerging countries 47 and China 74. What do you think? It's a big difference, no? Yes, but if we are taking the value of that, not in percentage, we realize that in Spain is $95 billion, and China will increase 3.7 trillion. Exactly 40 times than the more than us. So the trends are a little bit complicated in cost, in brands, in technology, okay? In the profit and loss account, they have better results than us. The forecast for us are not very good, as you can see. Okay? So, where are the opportunities? The opportunities, in our opinion, are here. First one is this. I don't know if in English it exists this word. Ana, lo he traducido directamente. Directly, from Spain to English. Okay, the difference between multi-localization and delocalization. Delocalize exists, no?
Sí.
Delocalize? Okay. Okay. Well, delocalize for us, is to take an industrial asset to move to other country and destroying the people, destroying the jobs in the country of origin, okay? This is delocalize for us, okay? Multi-localize is to go abroad to set up factories and to conquer the market there. So, the multi-localization is an opportunity. Why? Because we can have a value proposition in the bottom of the pyramid, more protection for the local employment. I will show you the results of that. The presence in growth markets, we can diversify markets without abandon industrial processes of technologies that may never be recovered afterwards. Okay? What are the results that we got with this strategy? We separate the companies who have at least one factory abroad, comparing with the companies who don't have any factory abroad. Okay, both are making a export. Okay, but we are separating in order to have the results of both. If we take the companies who have at least one factory abroad, they increased their sales, their export sales, 51% in this period. The local companies only 7%. The total sales, consolidated sales of these companies, for the companies multi, I will call them, okay, 84%, and for the local 27. Why 27? Because in Spain during this period was quite good the sales. Okay, in this period Spain was in a good shape, let's say. Add value, some kind of the result, okay? 9 times more in the companies who have a factory abroad comparing with the local, and in the local employment, in our Spanish employment. Okay, we increased the employment in the companies who have at least one factory abroad, and the companies who have not factory abroad, they decreased 70% the employment. So that means that this strategy is very good to maintain the people at home. It's not a zero sum, okay? We can maintain the people here in the Basque Country, and we can create jobs abroad, okay? And this is a very good reason when we are trying to convince our co-ops to go abroad, we are showing them that. Because, no, listen, if we are going abroad, we are going to China, what happened with our employment? Listen, you have here the result, okay? The second one, opportunity, the new global middle class, okay? Income average, 6,000 euros, dollars to 30,000 year PPP, 70 to 80 million people per year up to 2030, unbelievable, and 40 million in China in these 10 years, and 20 million in these 10 years per year, okay? And in India is opposite, 20 million for the first decade and 40 million for the second, okay? These are the evolution. For us it's very important because sometimes we hear that China, we cannot go to China. We have 20 factories in China today, yeah? But some of our co-ops are telling us that, listen, the position are taken. We cannot go to China. It's not true. You have here, China started to increase the global middle class here in 2004, 8, and they will increase really a lot. And India, they didn't start. They haven't started now, okay? They will start in the next year. India, with 1.2 billion people, has the same GDP as Spain, with 45 million people, okay? $1.4 billion. So it's unbelievable, but today is like that. So there is a very good opportunity there. And there is another very good opportunity in other countries. Indonesia, for example, 5 million people each year from 2010 to 2030. In Mexico, Philippines, Vietnam, 2.5, and Philippines, 2 million each year. Okay, good opportunity. And the third one, the infrastructure projects, and not the big one, the generation, transmission, and distribution of oil or gas, okay, or the highways. No, we are thinking in social infrastructure, hospitals, hotels, in the desalination. I don't know desalination, is it? Thank you. Okay, because sometimes I am translating in Spanish to English directly. Okay, so the third opportunity, three opportunities, multi-localization, the second one, the global middle class, and the third one, the infrastructure. How have we faced these challenges from 1989 until now? Okay, because we started our internationalization in 1989 through the intercooperation. We have now 9 corporate offices around the world, and we are trying to give competitiveness, okay, to our companies. And what we did is we developed the platform of purchasing in low-cost countries, okay? I will tell a little bit later, but usually the 10% of the profits of each co-op is going to an investment fund. And this investment fund help the other co-ops to go abroad, okay, to invest abroad. It's very good for our smallest and medium companies. The third one is the corporate diplomacy. And this is very important as well, because when you want to invest in an emerging country, usually the central administration is giving you a lot of advantages, okay? Not payment of income tax and the land and so on. But when you are going to the local administration, you can become crazy completely, okay? Because the local administration thinks that you are something who have a lot of money. So they are taking the money from you. They are sending the taxi inspector, the customs, and you can become crazy completely. Okay? So we need someone very near, very connected to the administration in order to protect our cores. Okay? Expatriates, we are managing the expatriates. The more important thing for one expatriate is the humility. Humility, Ethan? Because with humility you can have hear, okay? You can hear. And if you can hear, you can get the empathy. And if you can get the empathy, you can get the trust. Okay? This is very, very important. Industrial parks, we are buying lands, okay, in order to prepare some lands for our companies. The target of that is that they should think only in doing business instead to fight with the local administration. We have a 500,000 square meters in Shanghai, okay, and 200,000 square meters in Pune near Mumbai in India. And then we are developing the corporate intelligence and the infrastructure project. I am finishing, okay, and for this complex future, so we did all of that until 1989, what we are preparing for the future, okay? First one, innovation, okay? Now the talent is everywhere, so we are trying to get some agreements with Israel and with Singapore in order to inject more innovation in our companies. And we are trying to bring some Chinese engineers to the Mondragon University and to one of the technological centers called ICER. The second one, the financing for infrastructure projects. One of the big problems today in Spain especially is to get finance, to get money. Okay? Now everything is closed. And if you want to invest in one infrastructure project, you need money. So there is now usually the way to do this infrastructure project is through the PPP, the partnership public-private, so you need financing, the warranties, legal complexity, and multilateral agencies financing. Okay. The third one, the corporate diplomacy. We should teach all of our companies how to manage the relationship with the state, with the administration, and with the state-owned enterprises. In for example, in China, a lot of companies have the state as a shareholder. Okay, and it's very difficult to understand how to get the good decision maker, for example. Okay, and I will show you one of the examples. This is a company, SAIC, is the biggest one in automotive car. Okay, they have they have agreements with the General Motors, with Volkswagen, and with Iveco. It's very, very difficult to get information of the project. Okay? And very difficult to identify the decision maker. And we need to, it's necessary to build relationship in different levels. Okay? Our co-ops, they can't do that. So we are trying to show them how to do this kind of work. Okay? Industrial foresight. In 5 years, we are speaking about the world is changing very, very quickly. Okay, we don't know, because we are analyzing different costs in the profit and loss account. What will be the future? It will be better to invest in China coast or in inland. It's better to develop or to set up our factories in Vietnam or in China inland, or in Mexico, or in Central Europe, or in Brazil. Okay, so we are now giving all this information to our co-ops to define their strategy in industrial activities. And the third one, the last one, and the most complicated, the more complicated, is this one. The management of the people in front of the new complexity. It is really very difficult. I know for the English people, you have more experience with the relationship overseas. Okay, but for us, in our small value, it's a little bit difficult, okay, to explain to our people that the Chinese or the French or the Brazilian, they are thinking in another way. It's quite difficult. the Basque, we are collectivist, we are multitasking, and the French, they are in other way. It's difficult to explain that, but it's really one of our most important challenges for the future. Then if you ask someone in Spanish, I will answer you better this question, okay? Because it's quite complicated to explain even in Spanish. And the third one, we have the problem with the locals. We are losing some good people in China, for example. They prefer to work with the Chinese companies than the European companies because they are paying more and they have a better future. Okay, so for us the world is not like that. We are putting in the papers usually this. So when I am showing to our co-ops how is the world, okay, I am showing this one. I don't know if you know this is one sport in Spain, in the Basque Country called Arejas Ochales, and this is the stone, okay? So this is the second part, I am finished, okay? So we are living through hard times, but there is a new model that is totally based, okay, based on ownership, which is totally self-reliant and productive and efficient, that makes the people involved as proud can be. And that is why we are here today and why Mondragon has been successful for the past 55 years. Don't get me wrong. It is not a paradise and we are not angels. Important. However, our record speaks for itself. The jobs that we have created, the fact that every cooperative agrees to put 10% of its profits into the 10 values that I mentioned earlier. The global recession has hit Spain like any other nation. Even more, in Spain you are talking about over 5 million unemployed people. In Mondragon we voted on reducing our salary. In Mondragon we voted to share the burden. We showed solidarity. Democratic capitalism, it really works. In Mondragon we talk about hard-nosed, metric-based capitalism. It's our money. There are no frills, there are no perks. There is just profitability, low overheads, survival, just like you handle your own bank accounts. Now, employee ownership culture isn't a substitute for business metrics. You still have to work hard. You still have to have a very good product. You have to know what you are doing. But if you can do all that, you are on the right track. The main concern of Mondragon is to maintain employment under a common philosophical umbrella. When one cooperative isn't doing well, you can help out in terms of transferring people from one to other co-op. Retrain and keep them employed. When there are excess profits, we can help an industry that needs financial assistance. This doesn't mean you are giving money away. Tough business decisions are made. It has to be voted on. It's done by consensus, but the mechanism is there. I've heard people refer to our way of doing business as unconventional and to our approach as ascetic. For us, this is precisely what business is all about. This new model can help to build a workplace that is creative, productive, and just. Thank you very much. I'm sorry for my English.
Well, I wish I could speak euskera like that. I thought that was absolutely fascinating, and it provoked lots of questions, and I'm going to abuse my position to ask the first one before throwing it open to the audience. Does the fact of your wage structure, which is one of the most admirable things about the whole project, when people get good at what they do, do you then lose them to multinationals that pay colossal salaries?
What we do?
No, no. O sea, si la gente que se entrena se mejora y luego viene una multinacional y les ofrece mucho dinero, ¿se pierde mucho personal en ese sentido?
No, hemos perdido varios.
Does everybody speak Spanish? Can we move to Spanish? Is anyone in trouble if we do? Okay, we'll stick with English as far as we can.
Okay, we are
a bit of both. Okay.
No.
Herminio, sorry.
Si al mejorar las condiciones en la cooperativa de Mondragón y el personal se mejora, y luego vienen multinacionales que les ofrecen mucho más de lo que pueden ofrecerles ustedes, ¿esa gente la pierden ustedes?
Bueno, si la perdemos, perdida está, vamos, no podemos hacer nada. Lo que no podemos hacer, porque tengamos miedo de que se vaya a marchar la gente, tener que pagar mucho más y romper ese equilibrio que tenemos. En realidad se nos han ido de primer nivel poca gente, muy poca gente, ¿vale? Porque tenemos algunas ventajas. O sea, las ventajas primero es que decidimos nuestro futuro nosotros. No hay nadie que decida un día que va a cerrar la empresa y que nos van a echar. Si tenemos que cerrar la empresa, lo decidimos nosotros. Con lo cual, nosotros somos los propietarios de nuestro futuro. Eso es lo más importante. Luego hay un nivel de promoción muy alto. Los jóvenes que tienen ciertas características de liderazgo se pueden mover fácilmente, porque suele haber siempre diferentes... como hay muchas cooperativas y muchas empresas, se puede mover rápidamente a otras empresas. Se promociona muy rápido. Yo con 33 años era director general de una de las más fábricas más importantes de Fagor Electrodomésticos, con 33 años. Ahora tengo bastantes más, ¿eh? Digo para que...
So just to sum up, yes. Well, just briefly, very briefly, otherwise we'll be here all night. In the main, no, they don't lose people. And the reason they don't lose people is precisely because it's a cooperative. People feel as if they belong, and everybody is part of the decision-making process. Plus, there are so many opportunities, because it's a complex of so many businesses. The opportunities for personal development and growth are great. And the combination of all of these factors ensures that the temptations of higher salaries are not so great. I think that's what he said. Yes. Something
minimum
along those lines.
Is minimum salary similar in all the enterprises?
Sorry?
Is the minimum salary similar in all the enterprises?
Yes, en los salarios de 1 a 6, pero el secreto que hay que decirlo es que en realidad 6 tiene 1. El resto no tiene 6. Y normalmente nadie tiene uno, tiene bastante más de uno, ¿vale? Entonces al final eso se reduce muchísimo, porque el que tiene el siguiente del 6 tiene 4.5, ¿vale? Y el que tiene uno no tiene uno, tiene 1.5, 1.6. Y como además el sistema de impuestos español es progresivo, este que tiene 4.5 o 5 no está cobrando 5 veces o 3 veces lo que está cobrando el 1.4, está cobrando bastante menos, ¿vale? Entonces todavía hace el sistema como más justo. Antes, cuando empezamos en su día, era de 1 a 3, pero entonces los impuestos eran lineales, entonces la diferencia se mantenía con 1 a 3, ¿vale? Cuando creció la progresividad del impuesto es cuando pasamos a tener un nivel de 1 a 6, pero hay cooperativas en las que todavía se mantiene el 1 a 4.5. Y el 4.5 solo hay uno, que es el director general. El resto tienen pues 4, 3.75 o 3. Y otra cosa muy importante es que se nos forma mucho. Nosotros nos formamos mucho. Entonces, la formación es importante. Si queremos hacer un máster o si queremos hacer cualquier cosa, la empresa nos lo da. Y participamos en muchas decisiones y en mucha información.
So just to translate, basically he's saying that the...
Thank you very much.
This range of salaries, that no one earns more than 6 times the lower salary. In fact, it's much less than that, because there's only one person who earns 6 times more than everybody else. And in fact, there's hardly anyone who's only earning a sixth of the highest salary. The lowest is nearer 1.5, and the highest is nearer, apart from the exception, is nearer 4.5. And there are all these other benefits in terms of personal growth and facilities to do university courses, training, and so on and so forth. So together, there is this sense that everybody feels as if they belong in an enterprise. A bit like John Lewis, in a way, for those of you who are English. Sorry, young lady there.
Yes, English or Spanish?
Prefer Spanish, yes, but
no todos los, la gente que trabaja para Mondragón son cooperativistas, es la palabra, hay también empleados. Y a veces no pueden pertenecer a sindicatos y parece que no están muy contentos, que muchas veces trabajar para empresas privadas es mejor que trabajar para Mondragón sin ser cooperativista. ¿Cómo ve usted eso?
Pues
¿y qué pasa? En el, ya una vez que ha hablado del mundo global,
lo veo muy claro.
¿Cuál es la situación en China o en otros lugares?
Te voy a decir porque de los 14.000, de las 14.000 personas que tenemos fuera, 7.000 las he dirigido yo, la mitad, ¿vale? Porque entre Francia, Polonia y Marruecos están la mitad de la gente. Y bueno, primero te voy a contestar a la de nosotros tenemos en estos momentos un tercio somos cooperativistas, ¿vale? Y a final de, dentro de dos años aproximadamente, seremos casi el 75%, porque toda la gente de Eroski está entrando ahora en la cooperativización, ¿vale? Entonces, nos faltan los que están fuera. Y la gran pregunta, que es una pregunta que nos hacen siempre, sí, pero es que sois cooperativistas en casa, pero no sois fuera, jolín, ¿no? Bueno, pues jolín no es jolín. La pregunta es que los demás no quieren ser cooperativistas, que es una pregunta que nunca nos hacemos, pero que yo la he hecho. Y la hice en Polonia y la hice en Francia. En Polonia y en Francia les ofrecimos a los sindicatos ser cooperativistas. Y nos dijeron que tururú. Los polacos, por una razón. Normalmente, y esto es uno de los secretos más interesantes, porque todo el mundo lo ve, qué bonito es la cooperativa, y ahora si yo os preguntara a cada uno de vosotros si queréis ser cooperativistas, igual me decís que no. Porque claro, esto tiene ventajas y tiene algún inconveniente. Y te voy a contar los inconvenientes que tenía. El primero, que hay que poner 13.000 euros. Claro, pero uno puede ser propietario de su empresa sin poner dinero. Entonces hay que poner 13.000 euros. Que son fácilmente pagables porque se van descontando cada mes del salario, con lo cual ni te enteras durante dos años, ¿vale? Pues está muy bien. Entonces, como los polacos tenían un salario más bajo que lo que teníamos en España, pero cobraban más que su entorno, nosotros siempre pagamos un poco más que el entorno, cuando estamos fuera, les dijimos, bueno, la mitad os la pagamos nosotros de los beneficios que tengamos, pero la otra mitad ponéis vosotros, porque ya esto de ser cooperativista sin poner dinero, eso no. Y no quisieron. No les sonaba mal, pero cuando ya les dijimos que, y bueno, y luego tenéis que participar en la gestión, ¿y eso qué es? No, pues que si tenéis que estar en el consejo de administración, tenéis que estar, y si tenéis que tomar la decisión de bajaros el salario, tenéis que proponer vosotros bajar el salario. Ay, eso no. No, 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 eso no, nosotros nos vamos a casa, cobramos el dinero y hasta mañana. Y en Francia, que tenemos 4.000 personas aproximadamente, en Francia también les ofrecimos, y los sindicatos, que son los sindicatos franceses, son otra forma de sindicatos comparado con los polacos, dijeron que no entendíamos el tema de la lucha de clases y que no. Iba a terminar lo último, lo de los sindicatos. Siendo propietarios no podemos tener sindicatos. O sea, nosotros somos los propietarios y tenemos organizado un consejo de administración y tenemos lo que llamamos un consejo social, que es el que se preocupa de que, bueno, joder, que se hace mucho calor en la fábrica, o cosas un poquito más, pero somos nosotros mismos. Entonces, claro, los sindicatos algunas veces han intentado entrar en nuestra empresa, pero es que es algo ilógico. Es algo ilógico porque nosotros ya nos cuidamos nosotros mismos porque nos interesa a nosotros cuidarnos. Y un segundo, y hay otra cosa, que aquel que no quiere estar en la empresa, que se vaya. O sea, esto sí que es democrático. Igual que la libre admisión, el que no quiera estar en la empresa se puede marchar. Y además se lleva dinero.
Por favor. Right, so basically the question is every, it would appear, as I think the question was put, it would appear that not everybody is a member of the cooperative and there are ordinary employees, and how does this work in terms of trade unionism and so on? And the answer is that getting on for 75% of the people who work are members, that when they tried to introduce the same system in their foreign branches, it was the foreign workers who refused to go down that road for various reasons, but principally because in order to become a member, a cooperativist, as they're called, you had to put something in, you had to buy a share. and they didn't want to do that, even though it was, you didn't have to put the money up front, it was progressively reduced from wages, but they'd rather have had the money. And that was the case in Poland. In France, for instance, the unions refused to go with it because they said it was contrary to all the principles of the class struggle. And so basically, those who want to join can join, but there are problems, there are responsibilities, so that if you're a member, you may well be called upon, or call upon yourself collectively, to reduce salaries, whereas those who are employees obviously are in a slightly different position. We'd be here all night if I tried to translate everything that was said, but anyway.
I think that he said that one third were members of the cooperative, and the plan was to get 70% of the cooperative.
His plan is accepted. We are now in the process to go from 33 to 75, because each in Eroski cooperative they are now going inside the company, okay? Because we planned the doing like that. Okay.
Young lady, yeah.
Okay, I would try in English.
Well, if you speak both, you should do your own. You can do your own translation and then do it in both.
Well, the thing is, this question, I would say that it's not only my question, but it's a worry from many people from the Basque Country that we are living abroad now. The thing is that in my situation, I studied in the Basque Country and I started my career there, like working in different companies. But the thing is that I have to move out of the Basque Country in order to get a better job or a more qualified job. So my question is, in your opinion, how do you think that we, the young professionals, need to feel about the employment situation in the Basque Country? Do we need to feel with hope or with fear?
I think that for the new degrees, you should go abroad. I think that the future of our country will be abroad. We should be abroad to maintain our people inside. And the problem that we have now is we cannot find enough people to go abroad. This is our main problem. So when I have, I think that you should not think about going back to the Basque Country. No, because if you are, I don't know what is your life plan. Okay, this is another thing. I spent 12 years abroad. Okay. And I came back to the Basque Country because I didn't have other opportunity, other good opportunity. If not, it's possible that I would have continued in other country, okay? But what we need today is to have people abroad to try to get business for the companies who are there, because it's very, very difficult. You're coming from the Basque Country, no? You are Basque. Okay, the problem is in our companies we have a lot of people who is a little bit, how to say, close, okay, really close, and we should explain them that the French people could do only one thing at the same time, okay, and we are thinking three things at the same time, and for them, for our people, they cannot understand that the French guy could do only one thing. For him, he's a bureaucratic guy. But for the French people, we are not professional, because it's impossible to do three things at the same time well. So when you try to explain, and we have a lot another issue, say, like that, yeah. But when you try to explain them these kind of things, it's quite difficult. And you explain that, for example, in Morocco, they could do five things at the same time, or six things. And in Norway, they could do only one, but only one until finish. So explain that to our people is really very difficult. And the same thing for the contract. For us, we have more trust in people than in the norms. Okay? For the French people, the first is the norms, and then are the people. And for the USA people, it's the same. And for the Chinese guys, only one piece of paper. For them, the most important thing is the people, okay, and the world. Yep. So to try to explain that is quite difficult. So for that,
reason we need to have people with other, with more open mind, okay, in order to explain them that the world is changing, because this is our most important challenge for the future.
Young lady there.
You spoke about bringing, for example, Chinese engineers to your university to be trained in your
back.
Is that not part of the plan to compensate for the attitude you've spoken about? Do you have, because cross-cultural work and bringing people together, the only way they will learn is by actually bringing them physically to experience together. Is that the intention behind the idea of bringing engineers to your university?
No. The idea is more egoista, como se dice, egoist.
Selfish.
Selfish, okay? The idea is to try to bring, to try, but we are not negotiating, to try the Chinese students at home, okay, to, how to say, we want that they should understand our state of mind, okay? Not in order to change the experience, okay? Only that they should understand our state of mind, because then we can use them, okay, in order to send to our factories abroad, okay? We want the students at the university to para imbuirles, no sé cómo decirle, para
imbue them. To imbue them
about our state of mind.
You
okay,
imbue them with, not you imbue. Yeah, I'm sorry if you want to get involved in semantics with me. bad. You imbue with. So you imbue
our
whatever you wish.
Our mentality, okay? Because then for us will be easier to manage this guy if he understands better. This is for the students, okay? Then we have the researchers, okay? The people in the R&D for the research, and this is another. This is difficult because we are trying. When we move one Chinese guy to the Basque country, we need to have an international school, which is not easy. He has a family, okay? Then we should train him in order to give some ideas about our mentality, but we should as well train the people who is around, okay? Because some of them they can't speak English, okay? So it's quite complicated, okay? But selfish idea, okay? We want the students in order to use them then to manage our companies. We have now 20 factories in China.
One question, that's going to be two questions. The first question is, what's the reason to move production abroad? Is the reason because we want to be close to the market that we're going to sell, or is it because we want to produce something there to sell it somewhere else? That's the first question. The second one is, if the reason is to produce something abroad where probably the advantage is salaries, those salaries that it might increase in the future in China, Vietnam, other countries, and in the end that production may come back to Basque Country or the West Bank, and how long do you think that may take us to that thing happen? So we can bring production again here because there is mechanization and we don't know people, mm-hmm. or the salaries in the other countries increases.
The first one is that when we are setting up factories abroad, usually we are setting to get market share there. Okay, for example, when we moved to Morocco, we didn't sell anything until 1996. Okay, and when we moved the factory there, we started to produce there the refrigerators. We started to get some market share, and we complete our offer in Morocco with the products from Spain. So we didn't sell anything in Morocco before, and then when we started to produce, we sell, I don't know, 10 million euros from Spain. So very good. This is the first. Sometimes it's true that. As you saw in the presentation, when we want to to have the low cost product, sometimes we can produce in China, but usually is to answer the needs of the consumers abroad. For example, Orbea, who is producing cycles, they are producing in China for Australia and for Japan. Okay, so now, and the second one, I'm sure that this production, they are not coming back to. No. The evolution of the labor cost will be important in China, 20% each year, but they are now 1 euro, 1.2. Okay, in 10 years they can be at 5, 6. We are now in 20, 16, 20. It is possible for USA that they could recuperate some production in USA, because they are more flexible than us in terms of labor cost. Now, for example, 8 months ago, Ford agreed with the trade unions to have 10 euros the labor cost hour. Okay, so that they are more flexible than us. In Europe, I think that we won't reach this level. So for us, the important is we should invest in China, in the inland in China, in Vietnam. This is our discussion, but we think that the production that we are moving, they will not come back to, unfortunately.
I'd like to ask you about the role of the bank as central to this complexity in its management. Because what I've gathered from the past, and we've tried to learn it without success so far in Britain in the cooperative movement, is how the bank plays almost the role of a kind of the central overseer, that everything's okay and can move in when things are not going well, but then return it to the workers if it's then reconstituted in a profitable way. And this in any business is absolutely crucial. And so we've looked to that mechanism as a kind of like the orchestrator of the system to make sure that the thing remains sustainable. And the question I'd like to ask is whether this is still the case, and particularly when we have crises and so on, and they go down. Is the bank still playing such a central role as it did in your earlier period?
Bueno, pregunta si el papel del banco, o sea, del banco de la cooperativa, que realmente es quien orquestra todo en cuanto a, o sea, cuando hay problemas, que pone dinero, cuando hay vacas gordas, que redistribuye y todo eso, si hoy en día eso sigue siendo el caso, que fue el caso al comienzo del gran experimento, digamos.
Okay. No, in fact, our bank, it was the main key for our development.
Yeah.
But today is not our main key. Okay. Because the business that the bank has with the rest of co-ops is more or less 3%.
How many?
3%. We can. The Spanish bank, the central Spanish bank, they don't allow to our bank, to Caja Laboral, to have more risk in the co-ops, because the co-ops, we are the owner of Caja Laboral. Caja Laboral has 51%. The shares have the rest of the co-ops, and 49 the associates. Okay, it's a second degree cooperative. Do you understand me?
No.
Okay.
51% belongs to the bank and 49% to the members, no? To the cooperativistas?
49 to the members and 51 to the rest of co-ops, Fagor, Orbea, and so on, the rest of the companies, okay?
And not to the bank.
No.
Antes decías que el 51% era del banco.
No, el 51% es de las cooperativas.
Ah.
O sea, Fagor Electrodomésticos, Orbea, Danona, Orona, etcétera, etcétera. Tienen el 51% de las
de los demás y de sí mismo.
No. Ellos tienen el 50%. A ver, la Fagor Electrodomésticos pertenece al 100% a sus trabajadores y además tiene una participación en el banco. Es accionista del banco. O sea, la diferencia que tiene Fagor Electrodomésticos, donde sus trabajadores tienen la mayoría,
En la banca no es así. En la banca el 49% está en manos de los trabajadores, pero el 51%, la mayoría, está en el resto de los trabajadores de otras cooperativas. ¿Me explico, no?
Okay.
Espera.
Okay. I'm assuming I'm the stupidest person in the room, right? So I'm going to explain it how I understand it, and then you can all correct me. That each component company is 100% owned by the members of the cooperative.
Yep.
The bank, however, 49% of it belongs to the members of that cooperative, of the bank cooperative, and 51% of the bank is owned collectively by all of the members of all of the cooperatives.
Y antes y bueno, y luego el riesgo que puede tener Máximo es que esto es complicado de explicar en español. Con el inglés todavía más complicado. El Banco de España no le deja tener a Caja Laboral un riesgo con las cooperativas, porque son sus propietarios, ¿vale? Entonces tenemos aproximadamente un 3% del riesgo que tiene Caja Laboral es en las cooperativas. Nuestro principal banco cuando trabajamos no es Caja Laboral. Es el Banco Bilbao, Vizcaya, o el Santander, o el que sea.
Bank regulation in Spain makes it impossible for Caja Laboral, that's the Mondragon Bank, to have more than 3% risk in the overall company, precisely because there's a conflict of interest, because as it owns the company, it is, according to Spanish banking regulations, on which, amazing to relate, I'm not an expert, it does not permit it to take a risk. So in fact, when the cooperatives seek capital, they have to do so from other banks like Banco Bilbao, Vizcaya, Argentaria, or whatever.
But the crucial question that I would really like you to then tell me is that it was such a different bank, and what I'd understand is that because of something like that, you still want the function, that if something is going wrong, how do you then play the function if the bank can't do it? Do you have a mechanism to ensure the same thing that happened earlier on, not to let a company go down that's going badly, that you can then restore it through a kind of like a company doctor, so that it then can be returned to the workers once it's sorted out?
Bueno, si he entendido bien. Que al principio, el banco de Mondragón, Caja Laboral, funcionaba un poco como una especie de amortiguador, de ambulancia, punto médico, punto de rescate, etcétera, etcétera, y estaba ahí para momentos de crisis. Si ahora el sistema reglamentario no permite que ejerza ese papel, ¿quién o qué ejerce ese papel dentro de la cooperativa?
No hay.
O sea que estáis expuestos a los vientos fríos del
como cualquiera. Sí, no hay. A ver, cuando
so in the same shit as everybody else.
No, Caja Laboral está compitiendo con todos los bancos en el mercado igual que cualquiera. O sea, no tenemos ayudó mucho al principio porque nadie quería prestar dinero. Pero luego ya, vamos, todo el mundo nos presta dinero porque somos una de las empresas más importantes.
At the beginning, the Caja Laboral was immensely important, precisely because nobody else would lend money. And now they're all falling over themselves to lend them money.
Pero hay un rol que juega muy importante, que ese es muy interesante, y es que aproximadamente el 30% de sus beneficios los da para el fondo de inversiones este que he hablado antes, que luego permite a las cooperativas invertir fuera. Entonces, cuantas más beneficios tiene, mayor disponibilidad de fondos hay para hacer otras cosas. En estos momentos, que la banca está sufriendo mucho, pues hemos tenido una pequeña reducción de esa disponibilidad de dinero, ¿no? Entonces, ahí tenemos a un pequeño problema. No se lo he explicado.
30% of the profits of the bank have hitherto been used for external investments by the collective group of cooperatives, but that's problematic at the moment because of the general crisis. Herminio.
It seems to me that as a cooperative you are using this thinking of using the same principles as globalization, in other words, a sheer savage capitalism. It would seem that you cannot possibly compete against China or India. You cannot compete against China because they have such a massive population that is more or less enslaved. You cannot compete against India for the same purpose, and also because their principles are totally different to what has taken centuries in Europe to attain, a sort of social conscience and a concern for humanity. In India, you will find one of the protests that we make in England is that they use child labour, which would be, I think we lost that when in Victorian times the children used to go down the mines. Yet it would appear that you are employing the same principles of going abroad to employ cheap labour to produce your goods as the Chinese are, of which is blatant capitalism and which I see totally against the principles of the cooperative movement.
No me explico nada bien entonces. When I was speaking about delocalization, we are not delocalizing production. Ah, sí, perdona.
Te decía que no me he explicado bien porque yo creo que era la idea principal. Nosotros no deslocalizamos, las multinacionales capitalistas deslocalizan, nosotros no. Cuando una multinacional puede ganar un 6%, cuando está ganando un 2%, cierra las fábricas. Nosotros no cerramos ni una. Solo cerramos aquella que pierde dinero. Hoy podríamos mover un montón de fábricas a China, India o Brasil, hoy, y quitar un montón de empleo en Mondragón y tendríamos mejores resultados. No queremos hacerlo. No tiene nada que ver una empresa capitalista con nosotros. Nada, absolutamente nada. Ellos deslocalizan, nosotros multilocalizamos. Otra cosa es que no, esto no es un paraíso y no somos ángeles, que eso también lo he dicho, ¿vale? Y si tenemos que ir a China para conquistar el mercado y para proteger nuestro empleo local, nos vamos a China, nos vamos a India, a Indonesia y si hace falta, a la luna, vamos. Pero tenemos que mantener nuestro empleo. Y para eso hemos demostrado, a través de todos los gráficos, que la única manera de mantener empleo es estando fuera. Y lo que hacemos además, y esto sí que es bueno, lo que hacemos además es cuando nos implantamos en India o en China, pagamos más que los que están alrededor. Y además damos mucha más información, somos mucho más transparentes. O sea, no solo cuando vamos fuera montamos un, o sea, no cerramos nuestras fábricas, sino que cuando vamos fuera también el enfoque que tenemos respecto a los trabajadores es totalmente diferente. En Polonia teníamos dos sindicalistas en el consejo de administración, los tenía yo enfrente, en Polonia, y en Francia no, porque no se puede. En Francia había veces que les decíamos, os vamos a contar qué va a pasar, no. No, porque es otra cultura de confrontación, etcétera, ¿vale? No podíamos. Pero en Marruecos lo mismo. O sea, nosotros tenemos una forma de hacer negocios absolutamente diferente. Diferente y mucho más humana que en cualquier otro sitio. Muchísimo más. Y compararnos con el capitalismo, vamos, ni de lejos. No hay nada más diferente que una empresa capitalista que nosotros. Nada más diferente. No sé si ha quedado claro, ¿eh? Repetir por tercera vez. No, espera, esto no es un paraíso y no somos ángeles, ¿vale? Nosotros cuando vamos a China, tenemos que ir a China. Nuestros competidores están allí, están fabricando con mejores costes, ¿vale? Nosotros tenemos que protegernos, aparte de conquistar el mercado y desarrollarnos nosotros, tenemos que ir por narices, porque si no, nos morimos. Por lo tanto, nos instalamos allí y desde luego lo que no hacemos nunca es ni trabajar con niños. cumplimos todos los temas medioambientales más que nadie. Seguridad en el trabajo, nuestros datos de accidentes son 3 veces menores que cualquier otra empresa, porque le cuidamos al trabajador muchísimo porque es nuestro propietario. Pero cuando vamos fuera, hacemos lo mismo. Entonces, lo que dices, no, como no tengamos que ir a ningún país porque pasen cosas un poquito raras, pues desde luego, o sea, estamos en el país de Alicia y las Maravillas, y no estamos en el país de Alicia y las Maravillas. En España hay 5 millones de desempleados, y la verdad es que en estos momentos la globalización es una lucha totalmente durísima. Y nosotros, que somos cooperativa y que no tenemos capital detrás, ni hemos sido multinacionales en las que hemos estado en energía o en banca o lo que sea, nosotros tenemos que mantenernos en el mercado como sea, con nuestros principios, y te aseguro que nuestros principios los llevamos, en fin. Y luego, que lo de China, que va a evolucionar de una manera u otra, eso podemos discutir tú durante varios días. Pero también deciros que en China siempre lo estamos mirando desde nuestra perspectiva, ¿vale? Siempre miramos China desde la perspectiva occidental, y no estaría mal también que miráramos la perspectiva oriental, pero eso es para otro debate de 2 horas.
On that point, I'm going to bring things to a close. I'd like to thank Josu for an amazingly interesting and attractive lecture. Muy ameno, as you would say in Spanish. And also thank him for provoking, and to thank all of you who've taken part, a terrific debate afterwards. I'm sorry we can't go on, but I hope you'll all join me in thanking him for what has been a terrific event.